Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Reflex Podcast. We are coming at you on a Monday morning, very special tournament selection podcast. We are on the line right now with Men's Championship Committee Chair Jim Sidlisky, who was responsible in part for the tournament field that was unveiled last night, 9 p.m. on ESPNU. And before we get started, Mr. Sidlisky, I just want to echo the sentiment that this is a very difficult task, and I thought the committee did a fine job in both sticking to the criteria and doing the things that all of the little details that we'll never know about, just kind of making sure that this puzzle fits together. But I wanted to start with just, you know, kind of the real curveball type question, and that is, what was the most difficult choice that you guys had to make over the course of the last 2 days?
Lunch. No, I'm just kidding.
That's a good one.
They're all very consequential, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I know there's been, you know, some concern over the past couple of years with the coaches group at large about transparency in what we're trying to do and consistency in what we're trying to do. And I think this group that I worked with, I'm very proud of. I think we were very diligent in that regard about using all of the criteria, very little subjectivity. And when there was, it was really just used in the seeding process, not the selection process. The number one seed, as I said, in some other previous situations, is those top five teams were all legitimately considered for the number one seed. And those five, we really believe, were onto an island unto themselves. And something that, you know, may not be clear to everybody is every single at-large team, you know, Maryland, Duke, Penn State, Cornell, Loyola, you throw in Yale, there was an AQ team. All of those teams were considered for the 6, 7, and 8. And, we went through that at a very, very deliberate pace. And it's interesting, we tried going the other way, trying to get, how do we get Bucknell in? How do we get Penn or Princeton or Hopkins in? We went through those exercises, and, we just couldn't find the ways to justify putting any of those teams in over the ones that we had there. So I think collectively, just everything unto itself was difficult, because we just wanted to do right by the coaches and by the players. But at the end of the day, we all have a very good sense of peace with the way things shook out and the way we remained consistent in the process.
Before we kind of move on to the particulars, I wanted to ask one more general question. This is your third year on the committee. What do you find to be unique about this year's process compared to your previous experiences?
I think there's a number of things. First and foremost, the fact that there's now 8 AQs and that there's only 8 at-large spots. I think another thing that was different about this particular situation is there wasn't one or two Bocal teams with, only one loss or undefeated. I mean, everybody knows there was a boatload of teams with 3 losses across the board. So it was a matter, again, of drilling down on all of these criteria, remaining consistent, and, that started at the top. And it's really kind of neat to know that, Syracuse and Notre Dame went through the exact same process that, Cornell, Loyola, Bucknell, Duke, they all went through. And there was a great deal of diligence put into that. And, I think that's what's been different this year is, the magic P word, parity. This is something that not many people ever really see in this sport. And you compare this championship field in this bracket to what you saw 5 or 6 years ago, and it's definitely not your father's lacrosse anymore.
No question, and certainly as kind of the driving forces of facilitating the tournament that bears that out, a lot of responsibility to be borne by the committee. But now talking specifically about this field, you've made mention about the top 5 teams being kind of isolated and all under consideration for the top spots, but you also talked about the group 3, 4, 5 being in conjunction with themselves, which kind of implies that Notre Dame and Syracuse were in a little bit of a different way considered for that top spot. Is it as simple as the head-to-head results of the last 2 weeks that ultimately granted Syracuse the top spot over Notre Dame?
I would hesitate to say that. I would say it's part of the discussion. You look at what Syracuse has done. as far as their wins in the top five. And it is against teams, you know, it is against Notre Dame, who still is the number one RPI team. But collectively, you know, they're 7-1 in the top 20. And their, you know, their average top 10 is 7. And, you know, Notre Dame unto themselves had beaten Ohio State, Denver, UNC all head-to-head. And, you know, it's interesting. Everybody had in that group of five, theoretically, a significant loss with, you know, Hobart to Syracuse and Hofstra for Notre Dame. You know, Ohio State, a little bit different. Their low loss is Loyola, so they really didn't have a significant loss per se. But then, you know, Denver with the Fairfield of 24 and UNC with UMass of 22. But, you know, going back to the original question, beating the number one team twice in 6 days on neutral sites, that is could have been viewed as, you know, a differentiation point.
And then in that second tier of the top five seeds you talked about, you know, Carolina, UNC, Ohio State, and Denver, you know, I'm with you insofar as differentiating among them is a little bit splitting hairs. What hairs did you feel like you kind of needed to split in order to sort of bear fruit that way?
Yeah, it's you're looking at Ohio State and Denver first and foremost, and you get Denver where, you know, they split with Ohio State, but when it really meant the most, you know, Ohio State beat Denver head-to-head in the ECAC championship game. As far as, you know, significant wins, Ohio State has you know, it's 3-3 in the top 10. Denver is 2-3. Ohio State has, again, no significant losses. Their low loss is 10. That's impressive, which means their average RPI loss is 5. And again, so that kind of put it in that regard, separating Ohio State from Denver. And then how do you separate Ohio State from UNC? Almost in the same regard. They have a better strength of schedule. They don't have a significant loss. They have a better average RPI loss. Carolina has a better average RPI win at 25. Collectively, they have more wins in the top 20. However, four of them come 6-20. And again, with the low loss at UMass, that's how we got to that place for Carolina. And then again, the same indices we just talked about, Denver trumps Carolina in a majority of the categories as well. So again, the beauty of those pieces of selection criteria are they're there. They've been communicated to the coaches group verbally, and they have it in writing. So although, you know, Carolina, you know, they're 9-1 in their last 10, Ohio State's 8-2, Denver 7-3. Those are some of those subjective pieces. Again, splitting hairs amongst those five, and those are probably some of the main criteria that separated them apart.
Moving on, looking at this bracket, it's my job to kind of project them, and you know, certainly it's a fun exercise, but at times it can be, you know, feel a little bit like spinning your wheels. And then, you know, when I compare, you know, what I thought was going to happen with what you guys put out this year, very few surprises. One of the things that did catch my eye a little bit was putting Cornell on the road. You know, not necessarily a huge kind of situation or decision, but I did want to ask about it specifically in terms of what was the methodology or the thought process that led to not just sending the Big Red on the road, but to a Maryland squad that only a couple weeks ago was apparently one of the top teams in the country.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great point. And like I said earlier, all of those 5-6 teams I threw out earlier were all in contention for that 6, 7, and 8. So the fun thing about going through the process, again, was remaining consistent within what we were looking at. And Cornell, you know, their strength of schedule is a 20. Their average RPI win is a 29, and their average RPI loss is a 10. You look at some other things that, you know, jump out. They don't have a win in the top five, but they have beaten Yale, lost to Bucknell, beat Penn, split with Princeton, beat UVA. So theoretically, their significant loss by definition, you know, would be the Princeton loss. But, you know, they have a good collective resume, but when you start to stack it up against institutions like Duke, you know, their average RPI win for Duke is probably their weakest indice at 33, but their average RPI loss at 6, strength of schedule at 12. You know, they have wins in the top 1-5, they have a win 6-10. Very, very, they have significant wins, and the fact that their RPI is 12 and their lowest loss is to Penn at 14, it's still in their group of 11 through 15. So, you know, Cornell had, you know, a great deal of consideration, but we just couldn't find a way to get Cornell over, you know, Duke and Penn State in Maryland. We just couldn't find the way to get them in there. And there was just more things on the other indices that justified, you know, a Penn State being in before Cornell. You know, they have Cornell and Penn State have the exactly same average RPI win and loss. Penn State's strength of schedule 17. Penn State, you know, again has a top five win. Their low loss is 23, which they would lose. But again, it's just and they both won their conference's regular season. So, you know, again, there's pushes there. But again, if you just look at the criteria handed to you, it just ended up that Cornell just didn't have enough to get into the top eight.
And then the last question that I wanted to ask specifically about this bracket and the decisions that you made to come to the field were just about the you know, the bubble, the last at-large team selected and the first at-large team left out. And I realized that there was a group in that kind of spot that was considered. Kind of seems as though, you know, it came down to Loyola and Bucknell being, you know, in consideration for one spot. What was the thought process and the conversation like revolving around the last spot available in the at-large bid process?
The last spot, this is probably a more unique year where you can make the argument of that last group of teams getting in, the, you know, the Cornells, the Marylands, the Dukes, the Penn State, the Loyolas, that there was a great deal of commonality amongst those five. You know, Yale's already in the BAQ. But then again, with Bucknell, it's almost like with those five, you'd stack the Bucknell against those five, and we couldn't get to the place where Bucknell could get in over those teams collectively or individually. And yes, Bucknell has the head-to-head over Cornell, and that's a significant piece of their puzzle. But when you start to really look at the elements for Bucknell, it becomes a little troublesome as far as just processing, you know, their average top 10 was something that was a detriment to them. They were 26, which is quite low. They have not only a significant loss, but a bad loss. And there's very few losses that we deem as bad loss, but the Mount St. Mary's doesn't help their situation. And then you go to their team elements as far as what you find on their quote-unquote team sheets, and their average RPI win is 33, but their average RPI loss is 21. Their strength of schedule is very good at 11. They have no result in the top five. You know, again, we've already recognized beating Cornell at 8. They beat Albany, but there just wasn't enough. It was too disparate to get them over the hump and into the field.
And then finally, just a couple of procedural questions and just to make sure that there's some clarity in terms of, you know, how some of these seeds are come at, how some of these matchups are come to. The geographic kind of concessions that are made to try to limit costs and make sure that this tournament continues to move forward and grow responsibly, it fluctuates year to year. What were your travel restrictions or considerations when it came to trying to apply to this bracket?
Yeah, you know, there's two things that the committee is charged with. It's seeding the top eight and then trying to put together geographical matchups to get to the top eight. We're not charged with seeding 9 through 16. It's just the top eight. And then we're told we have two flights. The difficulty this year was that when you have Notre Dame and Denver and Ohio State right off the bat in your top eight, you're already hamstrung. And when Detroit won the MAC, the Metro Atlantic AQ, it actually alleviated some burden in regard that we knew that we can bust them to Notre Dame, Siena going to Syracuse. Towson is an interesting situation. They're 408 miles from Ohio State, and the NCAA limit is 400, and we couldn't get an exception. But where we're at with them is it's considered a flight. If Townsend chooses to fly, they have that a right. But if they choose to bus, they're allowed to. So we kind of set it up in that regard. And the thing the committee's tried to do the past 3 years since I've been on, is we've tried to keep some integrity to the bracket where possible. So there's some pseudo seeding going on. And I think you can almost kind of do the eyeball test on it relative to the 1 through 8, which are deliberately seeded, and look at their opponents. There's clearly some attempt to have a pseudo bracket put together. And then again, you know, you look at where some of the geographies fit. We have to make a very few concessions in as far as that regard. But, you know, the flights that had to happen, you know, we were fortunate to get that third flight. And that that was probably the most tense time in the room, to be honest with you. There was very little back and forth and fighting amongst the committee. But once we had to really hammer for this third flight, it was you know, we were sitting on pins and needles until we got approval from the NCAA staff.
And that's the second year in a row that that's happened, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's not a given, which it was, but hopefully in the future, you know, the committee is going to create a rationale for the NCAA leadership to revisit, because obviously this sport has evolved to a place where it's not regionalized like it was, you know, a decade ago or 12 years ago when this rule was put in place. It's a completely different animal now. And we're hoping that it gets recognized for that, and we'll have the ability to continue to facilitate growth in the sport by getting as many flights west as we need.
And, you know, obviously this night, this day, this week is about celebrating the present, but with this opportunity on you on the podcast, and you know, you and I have spoken about this in the past, and certainly is, you know, Bryant and Detroit are two teams under 500. They're getting automatic qualifiers. It's a topic of conversation. You know, I'd be remiss to not ask your thoughts when it comes to bracket expansion, and one of the things that could potentially, you know, be a reality in the sport, particularly as it appears that a couple of AQs may be in line, a couple more AQs might be in line in 2014. Just generally speaking, what are some of your thoughts when it comes to the realistic chance that, you know, this tournament field might look different in construction sooner rather than later?
Well, I think the interesting thing to consider is we'll have 10 automatic bid applications, including Atlantic Sun and the ACC next year. The very unique thing about the way the NCAA is structured right now is as soon as you have a core of six, you're eligible for an AQ. However, the committee making a recommendation for bracket expansion is actually out of sync with the budget cycle, because the two-year waiting period no longer exists as far as waiting to get your AQ. So with that being said, I think it's probably not viable to go straight to 20 as a true bracket expansion. I think in the short term, we will probably be addressing the situation with play-in games, which may bring it to a total of 20 teams participating. But the thing is, you know, once this landscape stops evolving and the chess pieces stop moving, there's no guarantee that we're going to have 10 AQs, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road. So I think we have to be realistic about this process and continue to address things in the short term for the betterment of the sport and the coach and the student athletes. But I think for a variety of reasons, it would be premature and probably unfair to go straight to 20, because we may never have that number of AQs being submitted again. That being said, my personal opinion, because of this being an equity sport and the way it's funded and the way it's growing, I would just like to see a 20-team bracket, period, regardless of the number of AQs we have. That's just me. But, you know, my whims aren't exactly what, you know, the NCAA Championship Committee is going to really adhere to.
Well, that being said, it's good to know that we've got a champion for bracket expansion that at least knows the right people to give a call to.
That's great.
And I do want to echo my sentiment one more time that, you know, and I hope that listeners out there don't think I'm just blowing smoke because I got you on the podcast. I really do think you guys did a nice job with the bracket this year, and certainly, you know, as you expressed, the desire to be transparent, the desire to stick with the selection criteria as closely as possible. I think you guys hit your mark.
I appreciate that very much. Thanks for having me on, and best of luck to the teams these coming weekends.
And the Inside Lacrosse NCAA Reflex Podcast continues with Penn State coach Jeff Tambroni as the Nittany Lions are in the NCAA tournament, and they will be hosting the Yale Bulldogs Saturday at 2:30. And Coach Tambroni, I think the first thing this time last year we had a conversation with a much different tenor as, you know, we were kind of working through the prospect of the fact that your team was left out of the bracket. 1 year on, how different is the feeling, and what's the mood like around your team realizing that there's a week left in your season?
It was unbelievable. We were nervous, to say the least, walking in there, just knowing what happened last year, and we certainly didn't take anything for granted, even though we felt like we had a good chance this year, probably a little bit better than we did last year. But it was a neat feeling sitting in that locker room 1 year later with our guys who didn't take it for granted either, and to watch their reactions, to embrace one another after, you know, what was a solid year. And just a great step for our program and for these kids. I feel great for our seniors, our captains in particular, Travis Crane and Jack Forrest, have done just such a wonderful job this year. So a wonderful feeling, and hopefully we'll be able to take advantage of it now.
Well, and not to mention the fact that you guys are in the NCAA tournament, but the fact that you get to host a tournament game, which is such a special opportunity for every program, for a university that's made such a commitment to men's lacrosse, particularly during the time that you've been there, to be able to bring this to Penn State, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to men's lacrosse at Penn State?
Yeah, you know, I just think it means a lot to the university, to the athletic department. You know, we've got a great deal of respect for everything that they provided for us as a coaching staff and as a team. And, this being the 100th anniversary of Penn State Lacrosse, we've gotten to know and meet a lot of our alums, the family of Penn State Lacrosse. And it's been a pretty neat year for our staff and certainly our team to get to know those people who have built the foundation on Penn State. And they've been super supportive from the players to the former coaches. So this means the world to us, but it's been neat to just see the reactions of some of our alums. They've already texted, tweeted their congratulatory notes. So I know it's just a great step for everyone, not just for the kids that compete and play or our staff, but for the university, for our athletic department, and certainly everyone that's ever worn the Penn State uniform.
That being said, you know, if I know anything about you, I know that you're a guy who, turns attention towards preparation very quickly. And you're also very familiar with the Ivy League. You understand what it takes to win a championship, much less back-to-back championships in the tournament, as Yale has now done, and they come to Happy Valley next Saturday. What are your thoughts on the Bulldogs with whatever familiarity you've been able to pick up from them? What are your thoughts on the way a matchup might unfold?
You know, I have a great deal of respect for them, first and foremost. Andy Shea has done a wonderful job. In a lot of ways, we're trying to do what he's done. You know, each and every year, he's gotten better and better. And to win that league, you know, says a lot about that team and those kids and that coaching staff. So we know we're going to have our hands full. We actually met with our leaders before the selection committee, just in case, and just talked in great length, if we were fortunate enough to be chosen, what needs to be done the moment that selection committee finishes their bracket in our preparation. And it's exactly where we're going. So we're moving into that phase right now, knowing that we're going to have to play a great game. But, you know, the bottom line is that we're worried about one team, not the remaining 15 teams in that tournament. And we know we're going to have to play very well to win. But, hopefully if we can go out and prepare well this week, get a home game, we'll put our best foot forward, and I think that's what it just takes right now is your best performance, and you hope it's good enough for that particular day.
And finally, over the course of the last few years you spent with Cornell, you developed a reputation for being a coach whose teams always played their best in the NCAA tournament, you know, routinely making it to the Final Four. What are your thoughts and how, you know, you're dealing with a team that doesn't have that type of experience? How do you kind of marry what you have done many times with what they will be doing for the first time when it comes to playing in an NCAA tournament game?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, we just met with our leaders. Like I said, we grabbed about 12 of our guys, brought them into a room, and you have to rely on those. I mean, I'd like to say it was me back at Cornell, but we just had tremendous leadership. It was them. I mean, those guys went through some very difficult times and brought those teams. The best teams that we had at Cornell were the ones with the greatest leaders up in that senior and junior class, and those were the ones that willed our way into some of those games and through some of those games. So we talked to about 12 of our guys here, and you know, talks about their poise, their leadership, and the essence of what it's going to take for those guys to step up and make plays, but take accountability for this week's preparation. And hopefully we'll do just that. I mean, certainly Yale has more experience having gone to the tournament last year, but the CAA tournament for us was good. It was the first time we had a chance to play in the CAA championship against Towson. And I thought Towson did a pretty good job with a young team of really playing with a lot of confidence. And hopefully we'll have learned from that, kind of a microcosm of what a tournament preparation needs to look like. And we'll do a better job with the opportunity that we have upcoming against Yale than we did against Towson.
Well, certainly there's no question that the best medicine for you know, kind of a disappointing loss like that is getting right back on the field. And I got to imagine that Nittany Lions and you are excited to be able to do that as soon as possible.
100%. 100%.
Thanks so much for speaking with me, Coach, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Terry.
And the Inside Lacrosse Reflex Podcast special for the NCAA selection continues with Cornell head coach Ben DeLuca. Coach DeLuca, obviously the Big Red being in the NCAA tournament, a familiar exercise for this squad in total, but I would imagine, given the way last year unfolded, it's got to be, you know, extra sweet to be back with this team and an opportunity to see, you know, how you guys stack up in the tournament. Can you address the idea that, you know, for not just your seniors, but for this team who's been so successful and consistent over the course of the season, to be back in the tournament and what it means for the team and the program?
Yeah, we're thrilled to be, you know, to be invited to compete in the National Championship Tournament. And, you know, I think our guys have worked extremely hard this season and have put a pretty consistent product on the field in regards to our success. We've competed against some very tough teams, and we've had some success in some different situations. And, you know, we're just, again, thrilled to hear our name called and excited to have a chance to be together as a team for one more week. And we'll continue to improve, correct our mistakes, and make sure that we're putting the best product that we have on the field on this Sunday.
That said, you know, in terms of my bracket projections and some others that were around the internet, you know, the Big Red being on the road was a little bit of one of the surprises in a bracket that didn't have a lot of surprises. What was your and your team's reaction to the prospect of heading down to College Park?
We were excited. We're, again, just excited to hear our name called. I think it doesn't matter to us, you know, who we may get matched up with. We just wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity to compete in the postseason. Having that kind of destiny taken out of our hands with a pretty disappointing overtime loss on Friday night in the Ivy tournament was frustrating for us. And it certainly was a stressful couple of days just trying to consider, you know, what might happen. But once we heard our name called and saw our name up on the board, we're just excited and thrilled, whether it's on the road or at home. Obviously, we'd love to be at home to play in front of our, you know, home crowd and home fans one more time. But just to be included in the tournament and have a chance, same chance that all the other teams have, is exciting for our program.
You know, that said, in the May issue of Inside Lacrosse, just kind of examined some of the interconnections between the Maryland and Cornell programs that know each other pretty well, given the fact that obviously you guys, you know, had great seasons to that point. And you know, when it comes to the fact that you guys don't play each other that often in the regular season, what is your familiarity, what is your team's familiarity with Maryland, and what's your impression of what this matchup might hold in store?
Yeah, we don't know very well at all. You know, we don't compete against them on a regular basis, whether it's in a scrimmage format or in the regular season. So we haven't seen them much at all. So we're gonna have to do a good job of familiarizing ourselves very quickly. So our coaching staff will gather as much film as we can and analyze it and compress it and put together the best scouting report that we can and get our guys prepared. I do know that we have you know, a ton of respect for Coach Tillman. And the Maryland program, the job he's done in Maryland, they've been in the national championship game the last 2 years. And that, you know, that certainly speaks volumes about, you know, the experience that they have and the talent that they have. And, you know, like I said, you know, Coach Tillman is a Cornell guy. I have a ton of respect for him and his staff and what they're doing there. It's going to be a very tough matchup for us, but we're just excited to be alive and have the opportunity to compete.
And I just kind of want to let you go on this note. I know it's a difficult thing, and a lot of coaches don't like to talk about this in general, but the fact is that a Cornell-Maryland matchup is so appetizing for fans, and I think a lot of people are going to be looking at it as the most, you know, kind of exciting or the game of the weekend that they're most looking forward to. That's probably because, you know, the styles, I think, are going to mesh very well, and it has the opportunity for being an exciting game between two championship-caliber teams. as a coach, what's it like to prepare for knowing that that's the type of game that you're likely to be involved in?
Well, you know, like I said, I don't know a whole lot about Maryland other than what I've seen, you know, sort of off the cuff when I've caught some of the games on television and certainly some of the playoff games in the recent past. What I do know is that the history of the Cornell-Maryland game, it goes back a pretty far ways, and there's a lot of respect for, you know, our coaching staff for the opportunity to compete against one of the traditional powerhouses in college lacrosse. I think this is almost a, you know, a throwback game back to the days of yesteryear when Cornell and Maryland would meet, whether it was in the national championship game or certainly in the playoffs. So, you know, I know that they're a very good team. They got some wonderfully talented players. They are able to score goals and to defend very well. They have a fantastic goalie. I know that. I know they're successful at the faceoff X as well, so they're able to control the pace of the game at times. But other than that, I'm not really that familiar with Maryland. I'm going to have to get myself familiar, certainly, you know, tonight and in the next coming days to prepare our team properly. But what I do know is that we also have an experienced group of guys, a hungry group of guys that are, you know, excited to get a chance to compete against whether it was, you know, Maryland or anybody who we were going to see our names lined up against, just the opportunity to be in the tournament after missing last year, after an extended period where we were involved in the tournament and had a certain amount of success. That was tough for us last year to not have that experience and that opportunity to continue our season. And I know our guys are going to make the most of it this week.
Well, Coach DeLuca, I want to thank you again for your time and certainly let you get on your way. I would imagine you got a lot of film to catch up on.
You guys, it's going to be a long night, but I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
And the Inside Lacrosse NCAA Tournament Selection Reflex Podcast continues with Yale head coach Andy Shea as the Bulldogs are heading to Penn State Saturday, 2:30 p.m. on ESPNU. And, Coach, you know, you're coming off of an Ivy League championship, your second in a row. Congratulations on that, by the way. And here, you know, 6-7 hours later, you learn that you're heading to Happy Valley to take on Jeff Tamburoni's Nittany Lions. Can you talk about what type of day this is and kind of how it stacks up with, you know, some of the other days you've had in the course of your coaching career?
It's certainly up there. You know, really excited to be going back again. I think that's the, you know, the big thing is it just shows last year wasn't a fluke. So we're very excited to be back in the tournament again, and we're excited to play Penn State. And, you know, I know Jeff very well, but we don't know anything about them, so we're trying to figure that out right now.
And that's kind of the nature of the tournament, and it's one of the things that's so beautiful about it. And you guys are all in the same boat. You and all the coaches, you know, for the most part, around the country are scrambling to figure out what's the next, you know, kind of course of action. How are we filling this, you know, filling in the pieces? And I think that, you know, coming off of a game today where you guys were, you know, dominant in the way that you were able to defend at times and certainly the way you were able to control possession at the faceoff X, you know, that's some of the things you're building off of. But when it comes to getting your team in the right frame of mind to make sure that you're preparing as efficiently as possible this week, and doing the right things in order to make yourself best prepared for Penn State on Saturday, what do you say to them? How do you try to make sure that they manage the emotion of being back in the NCAA tournament with understanding that this is an opportunity that is rare and needs to be seized?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I don't have a ton of experience with, but, you know, I think we're just going to take it like it's a regular game, but it's a big game, you know, maybe like an Ivy League game, so. We're just going to prepare like we normally do and, you know, expect adrenaline to play a part in their energy and just hopefully we play hard like we normally do.
What are some of the things that you feel like, you know, you've been able to do recently in terms of your, you know, kind of attribute your success to? Why has Yale been playing so well that you were able to win the Ivy League championship again?
Well, I think it's the kids. They play very hard. They trust each other, they trust the coaches, and they appreciate the opportunity to go to school here and play lacrosse here. And at the end of the day, the whole package means a lot to them, and you see that as a product on the field. They play very hard. As coaches, we're very proud of.
What are a couple of the things that you learned from your Notre Dame game last year that you feel like you want to apply, whether it comes to preparation or game planning or you know, making sure that you're emotionally tuned in for the opening whistle?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just making sure you're not just happy to be there. And I'm not that we were necessarily, but, you know, when the lights came on at the start of the game, I think their playoff experience had a lot to do with, let's say, the first few minutes of the game. Not that we weren't ready, so to say, but I think that we, just maybe being there before would have helped us.
Well, and now you have that experience, and obviously the experience of a two-day turnaround in winning an Ivy League championship, your second. And when it comes down to it, this is a game that I think a lot of fans are going to look at and say, I'm really interested to see how this chess match unfolds. You mentioned, obviously, you're familiar with Coach Tambroni, given his tenure at Cornell, and certainly now as Yale continues to improve. I spoke with Coach Tambroni earlier on the podcast. He talked about how what he's trying to do at Penn State is modeling off of what you've been able to do at Yale. So it'll be an interesting thing for fans to watch as two programs continue to develop and certainly take a step forward on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. That's a very flattering comment coming from Jeff.
Well, Coach Shea, we want to thank you for your time on the podcast. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, thank you.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Show Reflex podcast continues with Ohio State head coach Nick Myers, whose Buckeyes will be hosting Towson on Sunday, 3 p.m. on ESPNU, coming off of an ECAC championship. And Coach Myers, I think the Buckeyes are probably the hottest trending stock in college lacrosse right now. It's been my job to project the bracket over the course of the last month or so, and the way in which you got Ohio State has worked themselves higher and higher into the process. Now, coming in and checking in as a number three seed has been nothing short of very, very impressive. And I guess, just can you talk about the process of watching this team develop over the last month or so, getting to this point? Certainly a lot's been made of the turnaround that you've made since the loss to Loyola, and obviously all the accomplishments that you've ticked off the way since then, most recently capitalizing with a ECAC championship win.
Yeah, well, first off, Terry, thanks for having me a part of the podcast. And we're certainly excited to be a part of this special tournament. You know, we understand how hard it is to make, this field. We have a great deal of respect for that. It's a tournament where we've fallen short, certainly the last couple of years. It's a goal of ours every year. So, we're thrilled to be a part of the field. And, once you get in, you focus on that first matchup. And, for us, that's Towson this weekend.
And I would imagine that coming off of a league championship that you mentioned was a part of your goal structure and getting to the NCAA is really satisfying, but it's balanced out by the excitement that's associated with having a game to go. What type of temperature do you take on your team right now in terms of, the environment of watching the show, realizing what your fate was going to be, that the Tigers were coming to town, and then shifting gears?
Well, yeah, exactly. I think for us, it's a lot of different things, right? You just come back off a high of competing for and winning an ECAC championship. It's a great conference. It's a very tough conference. We knew what it was going to take to go to New York and come home with that championship trophy. And so there's a lot of tired men right now still. But, the high of knowing that your name is going to be called was exciting. We really wanted to punch our own ticket. We knew, going into the weekend that we were a bubble team and that, we did not want to leave it in anyone else's hands. We wanted to go out there and make it a sure thing. So, we knew tonight was going to be special. And then when you see your name come up and you have the opportunity to play at home, which is, certainly groundbreaking for our program, that's an additional, excitement level, for our men, for our alumni, for the university, and, for Ohio lacrosse. I've been out here 10 years and I'm very fortunate to be around some great coaches and people that have done a lot for the game of lacrosse here, certainly in the state of Ohio. And I think, to play in Ohio Stadium this weekend in front of our home crowd is going to be really, really special for our men and Ohio lacrosse.
I got to ask a pointed question because in the way that I projected this bracket, I didn't think there were a lot of surprises that were going to unfold. And I wouldn't necessarily say that this is one. It was just kind of a late development. Were you surprised that when the number three came up alongside your team's seed?
We just wanted to see who we were going to have the opportunity to play. I mean, as far as the seeding goes, the RPI is something that I know, Terry, you follow pretty closely. As of this afternoon, it was clear that we were going to be the number two in the RPI. So I think that's a pretty good indicator of where you may fall. Doesn't certainly tell the whole picture. So we figured we'd be somewhere in that top eight, certainly, and have the opportunity to host. And that was really all that mattered to us in terms of just having that home opportunity, which is exciting. And then you just wait and see who you get, And we got a great team here in Towson, one of the hottest teams, in my opinion, in the country, coming off a CAA championship, just beat a Penn State team, who we know how talented they are. So they have our full attention, and we're just anxious to get to work and try to get ourselves improved.
And then finally, you know, just a quick note on your squad and fans that got an opportunity to see, you know, first of all, the offensive explosion that separated you from Loyola in the fourth quarter in the semifinals, and then what I thought was just an incredible defensive effort on really from both teams. I mean, that was one of the things, and it you know, certainly a game that got to 10 goals isn't always going to be called a defensive effort, but the amount of turnbacks that, you know, both your defense and Denver's defense were able to get against two highly, highly talented offenses really stood out to me. And I guess I'm just asking, what are your thoughts on the way that your team's playing right now? What are you guys doing the best, and what do you think that you need to do even better in order to make sure that you're able to do something big in the NCAA tournament?
Well, you know, I think we're confident in who we are right now. You know, we have a good sense of our identity on the offensive end and certainly defensively. You know, we're making some saves and, you know, making stops, and I think we're using a couple different looks to help us get there. But there's always work to be done. I mean, bottom line is we gave up 21 goals in two games, Terry. So, you know, it's not something that I'm real comfortable with defensively. And I know the men are motivated to get back to work and try to be better there. On the offensive end, you know, there was times where we found our rhythm. And I felt like there was times where with Denver and certainly Lola did a nice job of getting us out of our rhythm. So, you know, there's room for improvement. I thought we did shoot the ball pretty well over the weekend, you know, and that's always a contributing factor, scoring goals. So you hope that that can continue, but we have been shooting the ball well. You know, we're going to play one of the best goalies in the country this weekend. So I think that's going to be a real key factor when you look at this matchup in this game right off the bat. So, you know, we're back to work, you know, certainly tomorrow in practice. And I think, you know, just doing the little things that we've been preaching to our men, making the little plays, clearing the ball well. You know, we worked really hard at our extra man this year. That's going to be a positive force. And, you know, I think this time of year, you don't want to make any changes. You just want to continue to focus on what's been working for you and feed off the confidence that you have.
Well, Coach Myers, I want to thank you again for your time joining us on the podcast. I know that, you know, not a ton of familiarity between these two teams, but I'm certain that Towson assistant Anthony Gilardi will be, you know, excited to get back into the horseshoe to take on the Buckeyes.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And the Inside Lacrosse Tournament Reflex Podcast continues with Denver head coach Bill Tierney as the Pioneers will host the Albany Great Danes Saturday, 7:30. And it's a game that, Coach T, I think people are just really excited to be able to figure out how to set the over-under for it.
Well, I'll tell you, it was surprising. It's exciting. You know, what Scotty's done with that group of Albany players and just watching the little bit we've seen of them on film, it's if the people in Denver aren't excited and thrilled of what's going to go on here Saturday, then they don't know great lacrosse. It's going to be wild.
Let's take a step back real quick because, you know, you're coming off of a very close, very exciting ECAC championship game loss to an Ohio State team that has, you know, a lot of Canadian indoor influence, and it's not unlike what your defense goes against in practice every day. That being said, what were your thoughts on the way that your team performed this weekend, and what are some of the things that you're going to talk about with them in practice to make sure that you're playing your best lacrosse on Saturday?
Well, you know, first of all, I think Ohio State was one of the most underrated teams this year. If you look at two of their losses of the three that I think they had, interestingly enough, they played them at home and on a wet grass field. Certainly our game was on a wet grass field. It was their first game they played on grass, and they are big, strong, and fast. And so, honestly, I think their home setting hurt them a little bit during the regular season. So they were a little under the radar. They got fantastic, you know, players. You talk about their Canadian guys, you know, King and Shirsch and Evans, and they are wonderful players. But they're so underrated on their defensive end of the field, and they just got a bunch of individual warriors. So that was a great lacrosse game yesterday. I think coming out of the Fairfield game, which scared us to death, because we had lost to them before. We knew it was going to be a slow, patient game. Once we got by that, we knew that the Ohio State game was going to be, you know, a great war, and it was between two very good teams. And I think the seeding in the tournament shows that, that you know, that these two teams had a one-goal game, another one-goal game, and it was a great contest. And on that day, the best team won.
You're one of the coaches in this game that I like to talk to about things. You can shed a lot of light on kind of how certain things stack up in context. And one of the things that's become very fashionable to say over the course of the last week or two is that there's an unprecedented number of teams in this tournament field that have an opportunity or a realistic claim to say, we can win this tournament. Obviously, Denver, you know, being in the Final Four 2 years ago, you know, losing a one-goal game to the national champion last year is in that mix. Do you think that's a true statement? Do you think when people say that, they're not, you know, I guess, blowing smoke?
Well, I think there's a number of factors that go into that. Let's start with Loyola in 2012. You know, up until that point, there had been 8 national champions, and really 2 years before that, Duke was a newcomer. Before that, only 7, and it was the regulars, you know. And so I think Loyola winning last year and Duke 3 years ago now has kind of opened people's eyes that it is an opportunity for others to win it. Now you throw into that fact a year where some of the strangest things have happened. When have you ever seen, you know, a 16-team field where nobody has less than 3 losses? So that gives everybody feelings like, well, you know, kind of, I'm sure every team is saying, why not us? You know, you've seen almost every team in this tournament lose to somebody well out of consideration for the championships. So if they can lose to somebody in the 20s and 30s and 40s, on any given day, they could lose to us or whoever the team happens to be that day. You've seen some wacky, probably unprecedented number of one goal games. You've seen teams win on the road. You've seen teams play in big venues. I think what gives everybody that opportunity to say that is just based on the fact that they've seen it happen so many times this year that, it, you know, as we kiddingly say, if the unexpected doesn't happen, then that's unexpected. You know, it's just been a crazy, crazy year. And so you even look at some of the play-in games, you know, Detroit beating Siena, you know, Yale winning the Ivies, you know, all these things happening, Towson winning the CAA, you know, and it just so – maybe some people thought that the regular season was crazy and that it would stop during the league tournaments, but it certainly didn't. And so if it didn't stop during the regular season, didn't stop during the league tournament, what's to stop it from stopping in the NCAA tournament? So I think you're looking at 10, 11 teams that could seriously win this national championship.
Glad to hear you say it, because there's no question that now it's going to be completely shock and we're all going to enjoy it and it's going to be so much fun. But I totally agree. I think that, you know, when it comes down to it, I'm glad that it was my job to pick the field and not pick the winners of these games, because I'm much better at doing the former than I am at doing the latter. Coach Tierney, as we kind of wrap up here, certainly want to thank you for your time yet again. But, you know, I suppose just to hit once more on the idea of this matchup against Albany and certainly what, you know, these two programs in the way that they play, the flair that they play with mean for the sport. And then also just, you know, from your perspective and the way that you prepare your team, what are your thoughts, you know, just kind of going forward over the course of the next week?
Well, certainly, as I told my team, you know, each week we prepare for our opponent. We put some of our scout team players in the opponent's top players' jerseys, you know. And I told my team tonight at our meeting that if we put number 2, 4, or 91 on any of them, it wouldn't do them justice. We have no one who can duplicate what those young men do. It's I think the thing that we've got to work on the most is sprinting to the face-off X, because there's going to be a lot of them come Saturday night.
All right. Well, Coach Tierney, thank you so much again for your time. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, Terry. Thank you.
Inside the Cross Podcast.